All right, speeding through the agenda, the next item, Joanna Ide, Technical WAC Amendments and Repeal, round six. Sounds like a prize fight. Structural improvements and updates, briefing and public hearing.
Okay. Sorry, I had to put my chair down a little bit. It was a little, he's a lot taller than I am. No, I don't. Thanks. All right. Good morning, Commissioners, Madam Chair, Director Anderson, and Deputy Director Storr. Thank you for having me this morning. For the record, my name is Joanna Ide, and I'm here to brief you on the sixth batch of rule changes as part of the preparations for completing the renumbering and reorganization process of the WAC overhaul. You may have noticed that you haven't had a batch five yet, and just to let you know, that's coming next month. I'll be briefing you on that package next month. There were some delays. We wanted to clarify a few things before actually moving forward with that, but this one is a fairly simple package, so it was able to move forward before the 5th. So this proposal amends WAC sections to update, clarify, and consolidate rules relating to sampling data and tag recovery, personal use shellfish, salmon quick reporting, and treaty Indian fishing gear. The proposal includes corrections to WAC subsection and RCW references and repeals several outdated and unnecessary rules. And unless there are any initial questions at this time, I was just going to move through the package just from beginning to end. So any questions?
No?
Great. So if you'd like to follow along with me, I'll let you know what page we're on as we go through. So the first item is a repealer of WAC 220-28010, which is titled Emergency Regulations. This is an outdated and unnecessary chapter, and it is this one singular rule that is in this one chapter, so it's just sitting there. So we're repealing effectively the entire chapter by repealing this rule. And I believe it was meant to be a sort of a placeholder and was enacted a very, very long time ago. And I spoke with Lori Pruce, our rules coordinator, before she left the agency, and Jackie Hersey, who generally heads up a lot of our emergency rules here at the agency. And both agreed that this is outdated and unnecessary, and there's no reason to keep it. This is because emergency rules are handled in a separate process, and they're based on the WAC section numbers that they actually modify. So we don't need a separate chapter simply for that. Plus, emergency rules are not handled the same way as permanent rules are, so they turn over fairly rapidly, and so it makes sense to keep them being connected with the actual WAC section that they are modifying when we do enact them. This rule has been on the books since 1960 and has not been modified since 1969. So it's just been sitting there alone in its little chapter for quite a while. So given that it's simply been sitting there and not used, we're proposing to simply repeal it. Okay, so on the next page, page six, we have another repealer, and this is repealing effectively another entire chapter. And this one's a bit more involved. The rules in this chapter, it's titled Commercial License Moratorium Review Boards. And the rules in this chapter, they outline a process, and it's essentially a hearing process that a person may use to request an appeal relating to commercial salmon license, the salmon charter boat license, commercial herring license, and the Puget Sound commercial crab license moratoriums. The chapter also notes that a person may choose to request a hearing underneath the Administrative Procedure Act instead, Chapter 3405. The process outlined in this chapter is quite outdated and has essentially been sitting on the books for several decades and sitting unused. Additionally, any determinations by the review boards, should they be convened, and that's part of the process in the chapter, is that we would have to convene a review board every time, and there aren't any standing members of these boards, so it's just not been maintained. So, but anyhow, any decisions that the review boards make are not really final decisions, and the director could theoretically choose to follow the recommendations of the review board or do something completely different. After consulting with the director, stakeholders, assistant attorneys general, and others, we determined that these rules and hearings outlined in them are unnecessary, as the rules have not been used for quite some time, and the APA hearing process is a better process to use since it's more standardized and codified in statute. Any person aggrieved by any agency action can appeal that action using the APA process. So we felt it was more standard and more appropriate than keeping these kind of archaic regulations for commercial license moratorium advisory review boards on the books. So, and I'll just keep on moving on unless there's any questions about that. I know this, it seems a little odd to just do away with an entire hearing process, but really, we haven't been using it anyway, and if you do take the time to take a look at this chapter, and if you want a copy, I'm happy to provide it to you, but you can also look it up on the legislature's website. If you just read through, the language is very old. So moving on to the next proposal, we have on page 7, it's WAC 2056-112. This is for sampling data and tag recovery. This amendment incorporates the provisions of WAC 232-12082, which is titled Collection of Sampling Data, Unlawful Acts, into this WAC 2056-112. The two rules involved basically mirror one another, and they're just in separate WAC titles. And the reason there were two rules covering the same topic is because the department never consolidated these two rules once the Department of Fisheries and the Department of Wildlife consolidated. So we've essentially had two mirror image rules that cover the basic same topic, one in Title 220 and one in Title 232. So we do plan to remove, just as a side note, we do plan to remove the language entity. You'll see that in the first line in subsection 1 of this section, because actually the definition of person underneath RCW 7708010 covers entity. So that's unnecessary. So we'll be deleting that before we bring it to you for adoption. The next item, the next WAC we propose to amend is on the same page, WAC 2020-56-315, Personal Use Crab, Shrimp, Crawfish, Unlawful Acts. Technical changes are made to the rule and penalty provisions referencing the enabling RCW are included. Corrections are also made to the penalty provisions, adding in the infraction reference to 7715-160, because if a person violates provisions of the rule without taking anything, without taking any fish, then, or shellfish, excuse me, then the person would only be guilty of an infraction. They would not be guilty of an actual crime. So we wanted to make sure that that was reflected within the rule. And also, there's an internal WAC subsection reference that's corrected. It was an incorrect reference to a subsection that did not exist, so we fixed it to actually reference the correct subsection. And then just some general language technical changes of cleaning things up, making it a little bit easier to read are done in that change as well. Next change we have is on page 9. It's WAC 2020-47-001, and this is Puget Sound Salmon Quick Reporting. This is probably the simplest change we have in this entire package. It's also a technical change, and it's fixing a subsection reference when referencing WAC 2020-69-240. The correct subsection reference is subsection 14, not subsection 12, so we decided to lump this in with the changes. The next change we have is on page 10, and this is WAC 2020-47-121, Treaty Indian Gear Identification. I'm sorry, that's actually on page 9. My apologies. On my notes, it says page 10. Sorry. Changes are made to update language and to incorporate provisions of a mirror WAC in Title 232, which is WAC 232-12-099, titled Treaty Indian Fishing Gear Identification. And this is done to eliminate redundancy in the code. There are two rules on the books addressing the same topic because the department never consolidated these rules when the Department of Fisheries and the Department of Wildlife consolidated into one. So essentially what we're doing is combining the two provisions and deleting, we're going to be repealing the one out of Title 232 just so we don't have redundancy. And again, these are all preparations for when we actually do the recodification and reorganization so that we won't have basically identical looking rules right next to one another. So this is going to clean things up quite a bit. The next change that we have is actually on page 10. So this is WAC 232-12-082, Collection of Sampling Data, Unlawful Acts. This rule is proposed to be repealed because its provisions are incorporated into WAC 2020-56-112 as part of this package, which I addressed earlier. If we withdraw the changes, this is just to get rid of that because it's already being incorporated into the other rule. The next is WAC 232-12-099 on the same page. This is on the same repealer, and the reason why they're in the same repealer is because they appear in the same chapter, so OTS and the code revisor just goes ahead and lumps it onto one page rather than having several pages of just one line. This rule is proposed to be repealed as its provisions are incorporated into WAC 2020-47-121 as part of this package. So that's the Treaty Indian Gear Identification. So that is the entire package. It's pretty small this time. So the next ones I'll have probably three agenda items for you next month. So we'll have some more complicated ones that time.
Oh, good. Commissioner Mankin?
Question on page 8.
Sure.
Why is it unlawful to salvage or attempt to salvage shellfish pot gear from Hood Canal that has been lost? Why specifically Hood Canal?
That's a good question, and this was something that was sitting there before. I'm not entirely sure, but I'll check into that and let you know.
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmitten?
I had the very same question, and I'm thinking in terms of Puget Sound. We spend tens of thousands of dollars to retrieve ghost fishing net and pots, and so it just seemed odd to me that in Hood's Canal, any salvage attempt has to be by permit.
I think all salvage attempts have to be by permit.
Director Anderson?
Or authorization.
Well, leaving the Hood Canal question aside for the moment, because this, I'm assuming that a permit is also required in other areas, but I don't know if that's true or not. So with that caveat, if you're going to salvage someone's gear, you don't know who the owner is. And so if you pull that gear up and is salvage 2 days after the season's over, it's closed, there's a crab pot there, you come across it and you take it and it's not yours and you take it home, is that lawful? And so we have salvage, we have permits, we do that in the ocean, we've done it in Puget Sound, where we authorize people to go and salvage gear. It's done by a permit, and that way it gets them out of being in a situation where they're taking someone else, a gear that is owned by someone else, and it may be marked as being owned by someone else. And I think that's why the permit requirement. Why it's specific to Hood Canal, that's a different question.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioners, for bringing that up. And I will most certainly look into that. If anything, what we can do is just simply strike the Hood Canal, because the director is correct. Yes, they need to have a permit in order to salvage shellfish pot gear because it is unlawful to tamper with another's shellfish pot gear. So if someone is out there yanking somebody else's crab pots or shrimp pots or whatever, whether or not it's closed or open season, that is an unlawful act. You're not supposed to do that. So without a permit, technically, the person would be committing an unlawful act.
Commissioner Schmitten?
I just thought another part of this. With a permit, can you keep the gear? I know in the commercial crab here on the coast, they bring it back and it's in an assembly area, and if you can retrieve your gear, if you can identify it. But who gets the gear?
That's part of the permit conditions. You can have the permit conditions be such that the individual retains it. In most cases, they're taken to a location and then they're destroyed. Hmm. Or particularly if you can't identify who owns them. In some other cases, maybe they're required to contact the owner of the gear, and if they don't come and get it within a week, then they're yours. I mean, so those provisions would be contained in the permit.
Commissioner Smith?
Just a broader question. I'm always amazed each time that you go through all of these, and I just wanted to know your process. Are these amendments being brought forward throughout the department, or are you just starting at the beginning on page one and working your way through? Because it's very technical and very specific, and I compliment you for doing it, but it's, you know, what the broader process is.
Thank you, Commissioner. I send out calls to the other programs to please let me know if you find anything, but mostly... Given that this is part of the larger effort to reorganize and recodify our entire code underneath one title, it's been fairly, I'm not going to say easy, but it has given me the opportunity to go through all of our WACs and be able to identify places where things need to be changed, because I can actually find things once I have it in my new outline structure, which I've had for quite a while, and I've been tinkering with the programs and making sure that they are okay and with how we've structured things. But and I have had several people approach me and say, hey, I found something. And I'm like, great, that's wonderful. Because again, you know, I am only one person, I only have two eyes, so I can't catch everything. So I have been relying on the programs quite a bit to try and bring things to me, but also just kind of going through and checking things over and over. And that's also useful because I also need to make sure when I do this restructure, reorganization, that we don't have any conflicts between any of our WACs, because the way that it's organized could potentially have some issues for, say, for instance, if you have a definition that generally only applies to wildlife rules or hunting rules, and you end up moving that into a section that would have a more general applicability, that could have some really big issues for, say, some recreational fishing rules. So you have to be kind of going through and making sure line by line everything's okay. So, but yeah, my process is kind of varied. But thank you.
Appreciation to detail is noted.
Director Anderson?
Joanna, I have a question on page 9, the 220-47-121, Treaty
yes.
Indian gear identification. I have a question, and depending on your answer, I have a suggestion.
Okay.
My question is, what gives us the authority to require a Treaty Indian fisher to mark their gear?
Well, that is a very good question. And I'm operating off of the assumption here with this that if we don't know that it's tribal, then we're going to be assuming that it's, you know, somebody that we do regulate. So, but yeah, that is a good question. But we need to be able to identify that.
So most, well, at least in my prior responsibilities around here, we usually built the provision to mark your gear into our state tribal management plans. But that in and of itself wouldn't give the department the authority to pass a regulation to require it. But look, just for the sake of discussion, let's say we have the authority to do it,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Then I would recommend, obviously working with the AG's office, some change in the language, and it would be something like, it is unlawful for any person exercising his or her adjudicated treaty Indian fishing right to leave gear unattended unless blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm suggesting that is there's a contradiction here, it seems to me, because the language that I struck says, at usual and accustomed grounds and stations within the Point Elliott, blah, 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 treaty areas. Well, the UNAs are on a tribe-by-tribe basis. The only one that this would apply very well to is the Macaw, because they're the only one in the Treaty of Macaw. The rest of them all have multiple tribes with different UNAs. So when we say treaty areas, that would be, to me, be a ceded area, which has nothing to do with the usual and accustomed fishing area. So that's why I would, if we do have the authority, mm-hmm. And the other reason I'm suggesting putting the word adjudicated is because we have UNA lawsuits between tribes, several of them, even as we speak. And so an adjudicated, that's why I'm saying it's an adjudicated treaty right, so that the UNA that this would apply to is one that's been established by the court. Mm-hmm. So, number one, do we have the authority? If so, I would work with the AG to address those concerns.
Thank you, Director.
Good comments. Any other questions for Joanna? And this is a public hearing. Do we have anyone signed up to comment? No, we don't. You're not stirring up much controversy here.
I'm trying not to. I'm trying to keep everything pretty easy.
Good. We appreciate that. Thanks. So when are you coming back?
I'll be back in November.
November?
Yep,
okay.
To request adoption of this package. We'll probably have a couple of changes, especially consider in light of the director's comments, and then also the other change that I mentioned about striking entity out of that one individual WAC. And then I'll have a couple other agenda items for you as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.